Far-right Minister Bezalel Smotrich calling the Gaza Strip a real estate bonanza, saying a business plan is on President Trump's table. He's added, we've done the demolition phase. Now we need to build. And, of course, this reinforces what President Trump has said on he says the U.S. will take over the Gaza Strip and we'll do a job with it, too. We'll own it. We have 30 seconds on what especially responsibility the U.S. has.
What you say is a reflection of things that can only be said by fascists and by fascism. What the United States must do is to stop this terrible, horrible fascist tendency. Listen to the American people. The American people are changing, and they would not let this administration continue what they are doing.
Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Palestinian physician, activist, politician, serves as General Secretary of the Palestinian National National Initiative, speaking to us from occupied Ramallah. A very happy birthday to Jackie Sam. I am Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!
CFRC from Kingston, Ontario. Your volunteer program, campus and community radio, at 101.9 FM and on the web at cfrc.ca.
Hi everyone, you're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. I'm your host Claire and you're listening to Earworm. Today I will be interviewing Marvin Chan, also known as Merv XX Gotti, a multi-genre artist that mostly touches on dream indie pop. He is in a hip-hop duo called Samurai Champs and an alt-rock band called Ghost Form. He is also the founder of Trifecta Sound Co. Please welcome Merv XX Gotti.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's finally happened.
It's finally happening. Yeah, it's been in the works. It's been in the works. Mostly on my fault. but anyway, we were talking about interview questions and how you've been doing a lot of interviews, right? And touching upon, like, your songs and, like, the meanings behind it. And sometimes you don't even know the meaning. Or someone just, like, points out something and then you're just like, I guess I haven't thought about it that way.
Yeah, that's, like, the nice thing. Even before, I just said my stage name is Merv Gotti, and that was just the stage name from the hip-hop band. But for whatever reason, people started saying the XX in between. And then, I don't know, maybe they see it, they like think about XXXTentacion or something. Mm. But then they would think I was like the one rapper on like a folk festival or something, but obviously not. But it's just stuff like that that comes up in these interviews. I'm like, okay, if that's where it naturally goes, that's probably what it's supposed to be. And same thing with the songs too. Like a lot of these interviews, people have been telling me like, oh, Soju meant like this to me, or Jiu-Jitsu meant this. And those songs, to me, I was just writing it, just trying to move through a feeling. I don't really think of lyrics as like something super precious or anything. I don't really consider myself a language person. I've always been more like on the math and like feeling side. Mm-hmm. So when people tell me like what lyrics or what songs like meant to them, what memories invoked in them, I'm like, okay, I'm actually learning more about the song now from like this person's interpretation. Obviously, I try to make it kind of make sense, but I also don't care if it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
For me, it's more so like phonetically, does this sound really, really nice? And I think it's just because like my mom's mother tongue, and like I grew up kind of listening mostly to Cantonese, and my dad's Thai, and both those languages have like the five tones. So to me, the tone is what's important. And then also like I used to work in this like yoga studio.
Or what's called, elaborate on five tones, what that means?
Oh, like in English, you could like say different, you could say the same word, but with different meanings. And it's technically the same word, but it could mean different things. But then the five tones in Chinese, or like in Cantonese, the difference in the tone actually completely changes the meaning. So I was also kind of thinking about this because I used to work at a yoga studio in my hometown, and there were all these like books on yoga history and Sanskrit and stuff. And then it also had this kind of idea where the word itself, the way it's said, is also supposed to be built in what you're supposed to feel from the word. You know, like when a friend says like they hate you. They don't actually hate you. But sometimes they say they hate you and you know they hate you. It's like the opposite of that. The word itself is supposed to make you feel how the word's supposed to make you feel. So that's kind of what I try to think of, like the way I'm singing the word. Does the actual word really matter as much? Or does how I'm singing the word and what the word is in a sound, does it make you feel the way I want you to feel?
Mm-hmm. Like, realize.
Almost, yeah, almost. I'm sure they were thinking the same thing when they wrote that.
So we're recording right now in Butter and Blue Cafe, and I passed by Krispy Kreme, and I was like, hey!
Oh yeah, there's one right there, right around the corner. Right, right, right. I've been to that one.
You didn't film at that one.
No, we went to the Spadina one.
The Spadina one. Talking more about your songs, you came out with a song called Libra, and just like talking about how like you like are more of a feeler and like how you're a Pisces. How do you really feel about Libra?
I mean, you heard the song. How do you think I feel about Libras?
I guess you like them.
Yeah. Sometimes I don't even know if it's my choice to like them. I just naturally like them for whatever reason.
Is that a coincidence?
I think so. I have a few like Libras in my life. Like in Trifecta, the label that I run, two artists are both Libras. And I have like a bunch of other Libra friends. And the common thread is they're all just so indecisive. And are you a Libra?
No, I'm a Libra moon though.
Oh, sh**. Is your moon indecisive?
Yeah.
See, it's that indecision, and I know like the theory or whatever, or the way they describe it is like they're not indecisive, they're just balancing the different options because it's supposed to be like the scales. Yeah, you're weighing it out, right? And I think sometimes it's annoying when someone can't decide, but I think actually that's why I'm attracted to a Libras sometimes, because that weighing things out, that balancing things, maybe something I'm unconsciously drawn to because I maybe need that more in my life. Because sometimes I don't weigh things out. I'm just someone like I see a thing and I just do it. I don't think about balancing, or I'm not good at balance. So I'm probably around Libras to learn balance.
You're more like you lead with your heart.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. It's not like I try to, but I always end up maybe realizing on the other side once something's done, like, wow, I really went so into that, maybe too into that.
Yeah.
Maybe I should have waited out a little bit more. Does your moon do that then?
The thing is about moons, it's like what you're comfortable in. And so I'm really comfortable in analyzing a lot of things. So that's my Libra moon, I'd say. I analyze quite a lot. Overthink, probably. That's the Libra way.
That's the Libra to the point where, like, you don't make a decision?
You don't make a decision.
Oh, that's the worst part.
I think it's because they're, like, also perfectionists in a way. Because, like, you want the perfect outcome, you know?
Yeah, but then that part's hard though, because I see these like artists who are Libras and they're trying to make the thing perfect.
Yeah, but they should just go for it.
Because art's never perfect.
Art is never perfect, yeah.
You know, you just do what you can and then you keep moving to the next thing.
Yeah, that's very true.
So are you never going to release this because you're going to be overanalyzing it? It's not perfect enough?
No, that's the thing. Like, I don't know, with this, it's like, it's kind of not something that I have to really perfect, because it's like, it's a conversation, I just edit it, you know? You know what I mean? It's like, it's not very, it's kind of just like a done thing.
Okay.
All right. Well, there are times where I'm just like, why did I say that? But then I could just like edit that out, you know?
Okay, like, I gotcha.
It's that easy. And I guess I'm also not the person who talks the most during these types of things. Like, I'm interviewing, like, I'm just asking the questions and most of the time.
So the Libra's moon, then what's the other two for you?
Oh, my big three?
Yeah.
I'm a Leo rising and an Aquarius sun.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just seeing how that stacks up.
Yeah. It's an interesting combo, I'd say. I have an Aquarius stellium.
What's that?
So it's like...
It's a stellium.
It's more than three like planets in that sign.
Oh, in your, like, entire planet thing.
Chart, yeah.
And which one is that?
Aquarius.
Oh, you have 3 Aquarii.
More than 3.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you must be weird as hell.
Clocked me. I'm not even going to deny it because I have gotten those allegations.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks.
What's your birth chart?
I'm a Pisces sun, and then the moon is in Cancer, and then what's the rising? Capricorn.
Capricorn, interesting.
Yeah, so I feel like the Capricorn, that's supposed to be like the type A organized whatever, right?
Yeah.
That kind of keeps it all wrapped up together. Yeah. If I didn't have that, I'd be so f- Like, I love other Pisces, yeah. And like water signs, I always get along best with them. I think because the feeling or the vibe's always the same. But when I see like their life decisions, I'm like, man, I'm so glad for the Capricorn.
Sometimes before an interview, I like to see like their birth chart just to be like.
That's part of your prep? That's a good prep activity.
Yeah, and then I talk about it, and I'm like, hey, did you know you have this in your chart? Like, sorry to be weird, but...
And then you just clock them and make them feel extra perceived?
Actually, I make them feel, like, good, because last interview I did Lauren Kovacs, and she had some Cancer placements in her chart, and so Cancer in your chart, it's really good because it's good for manifesting. Cancer is, like... for like nurturing. So if you take care of that part of your chart and part of that planet, you know, it's gonna expand. And Cancer is exalted in like for Jupiter.
What?
So that's why.
Exalted? What does exalted mean?
So there's like rulers of the chart. Oh my gosh, this entire interview is just gonna be about
so
like,
much about this stuff. It's crazy.
Help. Hey, Iron Ring.
Oh yeah.
I have an Iron Ring too, but I don't wear it, so.
You're an engineer?
I am.
Oh. Is that.
Oh.
Is that good or bad?
No, it sounded like you thought it was bad.
Oh, do you think it's bad?
It's hard. It's a hard course.
Oh, it's a hard degree. I thought you meant like it's a hard life.
It is a hard life. If I'm gonna be quite honest. But actually, I have a question about that. So
okay.
Let's like.
Okay.
So you studied software systems engineering.
Yeah.
But did a master's that involves building creative communities.
Where did you find all this stuff?
Dude, you have a website.
Oh yeah, I guess.
Just forgetting you have an entire website. Like, I didn't even have to go through like so many other websites, I just had to look at yours.
Oh, sick.
Anyway. Yeah, and you are now a musician too.
Mm.
What was like that light bulb moment that made you want to like switch careers?
I honestly never really feel like I switched. I kind of just like always knew.
So you like integrate your engineering degree into what you do now?
I tried to for a long time. I think it's kind of like slowly being picked away, though, because in the end I kind of realized engineering has almost nothing to do with art. Like almost everything that you do as an engineer, everything you try to be, everything you try to nurture and foster is almost like anti towards being an artist, at least in like in my opinion, I think.
I don't know, it's like, so I'm in mechanical engineering, and we do like mechanical design, but it's the thing about mechanical design, they give us like the constraints.
The constraints.
Yes.
All these things, requirements, constraints, these are all like completely extrinsic to you, you know?
There's like no freedom, creativity.
Yeah, but it's also you train yourself to not listen to yourself. You know, you're always thinking of like, what are these requirements? What are the constraints of like the natural physical world, like physics? But art is almost all listening to yourself, I think, on the deepest level. So after that, I came to terms with that. I was like, hey, I gotta like almost delete a lot of this engineering stuff in me. I mean, I'm still like grateful for it. Like I did the degree and then I got like a pretty good scholarship to do a master's. And then around that time was when I started Trifecta, because it started as like a music festival first. And then so I did use like, you know, the engineering brain to kind of like make that. And then that was kind of the action research that I used for my thesis.
How did you use the engineering part to?
It's just like festival organization, logistics, you know, it's all just problem solving. And that has like less to do with art. And so when I made my thesis about it, I tried to really consolidate the two, like, because I was still an artist at the time. How do I apply, or at least like make use of engineering and art? But by the end, I was like, oh, this thesis is actually completely wrong. These things actually can't consolidate, I think, to me. But I mean, that's why, that's also kind of why the album that's supposed to come out at the end of the month is like, it has that long, obnoxious name, like a thesis on low efficiency emotional extraction. It's like a typical kind of titling format for like a master's thesis. But in the end, I realized like, oh, this album was like the thesis. And it was like the most inefficient way. Like, I could have just been a regular artist and just like, oh, I can feel my feelings and that'd be it, you know?
So you said that you try to put engineering in your degree, but then earlier you said that you don't think you switched careers, but you tried to integrate engineering, but it didn't work out. So.
Yeah, I guess to me it's like I've always kind of just been an artist first. But then, just because I already had the degree, mostly from my parents, you know, you want to kind of make use of it. So I really try to, like, take certain parts. And I'm not saying it's, like, completely, it's not like I don't use it at all. Like, that's definitely the part where I can, like, manage myself. It still has a lot to do with, like, logistics for tour organization or, like, grant writing and stuff. But in terms of the core art side, like, songwriting, figuring out what you want to say, I almost, like, anytime I'm actually making art, not a festival, not a tour, but just the art, I have to turn off everything that has to do with engineering. But you're able to put the two together?
I also try to, I think, like, with sound engineering, right? Like, You do use some of the electrical and software side. Not really software, more electrical. I haven't really used it, you know? Like, I do like to be more on the creative side of it, and I just prefer it that way. But, you know, with radio, something I'm interested in, like, you can put more, like, scientific and, like, physics into it, but I do prefer the creative side of it. So, I don't know, I think it's a good outlet to just, like, we're putting how many years into, like, engineering and, like, putting, like, burning out our brain.
Oh, no. So many years.
So many years, and then just having a creative outlet is just like without having anything to do with engineering is like nice.
Well, why does the creative side feel better to you?
It's more natural, I guess, to me, and I don't find it as like more of a chore as like doing math.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's also just like such a different thing from engineering. It's, like, if I integrate, like, stuff about... Maybe I resent engineering. Maybe that's why. Is this therapy? I don't know.
Is this where we went? We went from astrology...
Is this a therapy session?
I mean, it could be. Aren't the best interviews usually... they turn into that?
Yeah, honestly. Either the unserious ones or, like, the deep ones. Those are usually, like, my favorite episodes.
Mm-hmm. Well, why'd you go into engineering?
Why did I go into engineering? I didn't know what I wanted to do. I still didn't know what I wanted to do by the end of first year. So I went into the most broad engineering. And I also, like, liked how there was, like, mechanical design, I guess.
Yeah, see? It was, like, kind of similar to that. Like,
I wanted to go into something artistic, but, like, also make money. But then job market is so competitive now. Who knows if I'll make money?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's that part, too. Like, I didn't really go... Because, like, I went into software because I'm just, like, not really good with people. Like, I'm not really good at working in a team. But then software is the most... that you can kind of just be on a laptop by yourself. But now it doesn't matter because AI can, like, code better than everyone.
Exactly.
You know, so in the end, I'm just like, I still always feel like the best about my decisions that I made with art, but I can't say the same about the decisions I made with engineering, you know? Because again, it's always like engineering decisions you have to make based on constraints and requirements. It's not based on you. It's not for you. So then to me, like, the decisions you make for art, even if they're the wrong decisions, you're still, like, trying to make them, but listen to yourself. Like, you're trying to listen to the little voice in yourself. So either you get it right because it's for you, or you're like, oh, why'd I do that? But now I can shift a little bit for next time.
I think, like, I'm not saying that everybody's like this. Like, some people probably are, like, really passionate about engineering.
Oh, for sure. Oh, for sure. Yeah. But, yeah.
You know, like, maybe engineering is, like, the people pleaser degree, you know? Like, you have to please a lot of people.
That is such a good hot take. Wow. Is this therapy? Just kidding.
Because, hey, like, you want to make money, you want to make your parents proud, and then also, like, want to make the company proud, and you're also this middleman of, like, doing
work,
right?
This is so good. That's so good. That is actually so good. Because you're right. Like, this isn't what I'm saying is definitely not. That's not an everybody kind of thing. Like, for sure, when I was, like, my last 9-to-5 actually was, like, working. It wasn't, like, a pure engineering company, but it was, like, kind of like an art tech company that was in the States. And so there was, like, a good balance, like, half engineers and half artists. But you could so see that kind of friction between the two.
Yeah.
Because there was almost, like, fundamentally a disagreement in the way they live. And I don't really know if we even choose that. You know, like, for artists, we do need to listen to ourselves. Like, what is this life? What are we supposed to convey? Or, like, what do we connect with? But for the engineers, there'd be no way. And they're happy with that. Like, all they want to do is just, like, solve problems. Yeah. That's about it.
Yeah, they're MBTI, you know. It's probably an S.
No thoughts. No thoughts. Pure NPC.
Yeah, and artists, there's, like, such a difference when it comes to engineering majors and art side majors. You could really have, like, a really deep conversation with an art side major, but then engineers, they don't do a lot of, like, reports, or it's, like, mostly group reports or, like, technical reports, so it's just, like, where is our critical thinking?
That was something that I felt farther and farther away from, and I think it has to do with what you're saying, like, the people pleasing thing. When you're always thinking about, like, what does someone else want, what does an external thing want, you're not actually critically thinking.
Mm-hmm.
You're not questioning things, you're just trying to appease,
yeah,
like, something. And then I don't know, you ever, like, have that really strange thing when you look at it's usually two guys at, like, a restaurant or a bar or in public, and they're either not talking or they're talking, but they're not actually saying anything. They're just, like, naming different sports people's names.
Yeah.
And then I find that happens all the time when I see, like, two engineers, usually guys, they talk, they're not talking about anything. They're just, like, quoting different other dudes or, like, talking about, like, aliens.
Yeah.
Or something. It's never, like, a back and forth or questioning a bunch of things, you know? And I don't really feel like that's really getting to the depth of anything.
Like, where's this conversation going?
Yeah. This is so funny how this basically just became an engineer roast.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're valid though.
We're speaking the truth.
Because
we're speaking the truth.
Because we're engineers and we are witnessing, like, creative industry and how, like, it's an interesting.
I feel like this could even go, like, deeper, even, you know, when if the whole point of, like, art, listening to the little voice in you, being able to have that kind of critically take apart things with other people, you know, actually have, like, a conversation and find, like, a deeper root of something. That I actually feel like leads to why a lot of things, especially in Western society, aren't very good right now. Because for the most part, we just kind of let engineers lead. They make all the technology, they make all the calls and everything, but they're not actually thinking about the impact of what these things do. Everyone's attention spans are just shot. Like, you know, there's, like, environment isn't getting any better. People hate each other more than ever. And I don't think it has to do with a technological issue. It's just the critical thinking and the introspection actually doesn't happen before the making for an engineer.
Yeah, and you know, with the job market being really bad for engineers currently, or just in general for anyone in the job market right now,
mm-hmm,
engineers would just take any job, and it's kind of scary because, you know, there are people who are willing to go into companies that make bombs for, like,
yeah. it's like, that's always the scary thing to me, is like, for whatever reason, I know it's a requirement of like being an engineer, you need to get really good at following these requirements and everything. But all those things, you get really good at single pointed problem solving, you get really good at solving complex problems, but for whatever reason, you become really bad at following an internal compass. It like destroys your ethics and morals, not because you mean to, it's not malicious, but you just don't spend any time thinking about it, which I don't think is a good thing.
Yeah, it's kind of sad, actually, that we have an...
It's ethics. So sad!
We have an engineering ethics course, like, it's not, like, supposed to be actually, like, something we already have, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I remember that course, like, and you think those things, ethics and morals, come from one class? Like, it comes from, like, thinking about it every day.
Yeah.
Always, like, changing your decisions, you know, little bit by little
bit.
And
the ego dust.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I don't know, it's just, like, and people, like, they don't actually say the right answer, they just want a good grade, you know?
Yeah.
They don't even actually...
You're so right, it is just the lifestyle of people pleasing.
Anyway, moving on. So
this became the most like woo-woo engineering roast ever. It's,
I know,
so
but the
good.
Thing is, I really like these type of things where I just don't even feel like an interview.
Yeah. Are you gonna be allowed to post this on the Kingston Radio?
Yeah, I mean, I post whatever I want.
You're like, I am the cowboy of my own trip.
Yeah, my favorite thing about like CFRC is just that how like chill they are. You know, they just like, I don't know how it is at like Met Radio and like the other places, but CFRC is like really chill. So and low key like politically correct. Can I say that? Like, can I say that?
I mean, that's actually, like, I really, really like, I didn't really get these opportunities as much with the hip-hop stuff before that I was doing, you know, because it's not always the majority genre on campus radios, but with the guitar song stuff, it really works for campus radio, you know, I can just be, like, the single guy with a guitar and minimal setup and just play on the radio, but the thing that I like the most about it is it, like, actually lets me visit these campus radio stations, and they're always, like, the ones that are actually still connected to the community. They give me like all of the local knowledge of these are like the local festivals or the local venues. It's almost like an outpost or like a fungal network or something, and it's still always like real. There is that introspection, or even you could say like free speech. Like free speech is still alive in the radio, you know, no algorithm telling you what to say or think. It's been really good still.
No, like I fell in love with radio. It's like specifically campus radio,
yeah,
because I could just like play the songs that I like and say what I want to say. And it's different with corporate radio. It's like scripted, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They curate the playlist, someone else curates the playlist, and it's a whole team. Like, yeah, it's great, but it's just like, this is only me.
This is you.
This is me.
Yeah.
It's like you and your guitar. This is me and my mic.
Exactly. I feel like that's like closer to art, you know? Like,
yeah.
When you hear a campus radio show or the programming or whatever, you actually kind of feel like you get to know the person, you get to know the host. Like, oh, the host's taste and personalities like this. With like, as soon as you get to corporate radio, there's just like so many people saying, again, it goes back to the engineering thing, like there's so many requirements to fulfill. You're like, whose personality even is this?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. But the thing is, there are like so many more opportunities with like corporate radio. You get to meet more artists and like,
mm-hmm.
But the thing is, I honestly ended up really loving local music and like discovering so many like artists because I do this, like you. But you were talking about your guitar, and I did have a question about mm-hmm. that. Okay, so there are many times where it's just you and your guitar playing at shows, and sometimes even in your songs, it just sounds like you and your guitar in the spotlight, and even coming out with a project called Guitar Songs. Is it your favorite instrument to play? I love how the buildup is like that, and it's just like the simplest question ever.
I actually don't know. I'm not sure. I don't know. I mean, I named it Guitar Songs just because I started writing them when I was still in the hip-hop project. So then Guitar Songs, like, it was just easy to reference. Maybe that's the part of me that, like, why I went into engineering was because, like, yeah, I am a pretty literal person. I've always been good at math and patterns and programming. And even, like, I mean, sometimes people get annoyed, but they're like, hey, what's song we're practicing today, and I'll just say, like, EP 2, song 4. And I'm like, can you just say the name?
Right. That sounds like a code, actually.
So guitar sounds, it's just like, it was kind of, who knows? Who knows with these things? Maybe it was, like, what my unconscious wanted to happen the whole time. But consciously at the time, it just felt like a practical decision. Like, COVID happened, parties evaporated, the hip-hop project was, like, a party band, basically. No one knew if live music was gonna come back, and all I had in my basement was like this guitar. It was like, okay, so I guess this is what I'm making. And I don't even consider myself a guitar player. I don't think I'm that good at guitar. It's just like, that was my composition
it's
tool
one of
at
your
the time.
Tools and your tool.
It is just the tool. It is just the duel, you know?
Did they say that in Legendary Tour?
Yeah. Stupid. It's just a tool in your toolbox.
But you've been playing since COVID? Or has it been before that?
My first guitar I got when, I don't even remember how old I was, but it was just from like a garage sale. And it's not like I practiced that seriously. I would just like fiddle around during loading screens because I like to play online games. And that was when the internet was like really slow. But yeah, I've always grown up playing video games, like single player games. The introversion goes into the video games even. So I always kind of like, I guess, played guitar, but I never like seriously practiced or made it a part of my identity, really. And I didn't play guitar for the longest time. During the hip-hop stuff, I just sang. But it's been nice, like, last 2-3 years, it's like I've gotten to relearn playing guitar. And especially, I still had like a lot of friends from the music scene in my hometown, and a lot of them are like real guitarists, like real musicians. Like,
and you learn a lot from them
all the time. And it's really funny because then I'll ask them about like a distortion pedal or how to do something, and they're like, this is hilarious that you're learning this stuff like right now.
Yeah.
But I'm just kind of learning. I'm just like learning as I go, which is nice.
Yeah. What was like the first song you learned on your guitar? Do you remember?
Like ever?
Someone is slumping now. What's your MPTI, actually?
Okay, actually, for the longest time when I was in engineering and when, like, early trifecta, I think, like, basically pre-COVID, I was INTJ.
TJ.
So the I has always been there for sure.
When you were in
jail. Yeah, and like pre-COVID, when I was doing like a lot more, I was heavier on the trifecta side, like organizing a lot of shows, doing really like logistical things. I was still using like the engineering brain, but I think I did it like recently, and now I'm INFP.
Honestly, I switched between ENFP and INFP, because they say that like INFP is the extroverted.
INFP?
INFP is like the most extroverted amongst the introverts.
Oh.
And ENFP is like the most introverted amongst all the extroverts.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's so interesting, because most of the people in Trifecta, a lot of the other artists, the Libras, they were usually ENFP. And then that always felt like a weird kind of balance thing. It's like, they were definitely more extroverted than me, but they were still like, they would have enough introversion that I wouldn't find them annoying.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
That's interesting. I didn't know that you said the INFP is the most extroverted out of the I's.
Yeah.
That's so interesting, because I always thought like, anytime I do the thing, you know how it's like a spectrum for each one? The thing that switched was like, the T and the F is supposed to be thinking and feeling, right? It was always pretty close to the middle, but it would always just like move. So it would make sense that before it was on the thinking side because I was doing more engineering related tasks, and now it's more F because I'm an artist mostly now.
Yeah.
But the I was always way on that side.
Yeah.
All the time. I and the N, N's supposed to be like intuitiveness, right? Those two are always on that side. Those two like didn't change at all.
So you're an overthinker too.
Yeah. That's why I'm here.
That's why you're here. Yeah. It's interesting because I always like teeter between like introverted and extroverted, and then for perceiving and judging.
The perceiving and judging one is, like, interesting, because that was one thing that switched too. I see why. I think you. It goes back to what you're saying with, like, the requirements and the specifications and stuff for engineering. Literally, you have to, like, you have to judge. Like, that is the wiring in your brain that's getting trained or whatever. But then I feel like that's why moving more towards an artist, you switch to the P, because you actually have to, like, try to judge less, you know? That's why, like, I don't know, typically artists are, like, a little bit more open and stuff. I still think I'm a pretty, like, judgmental person, but it's still, like, you know, slowly.
It's weird. I think I've always been, like, NFP. Like, even when
oh, really?
I'm an engineer.
The NFP is your, like, constant.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I've been an INFJ at one point. That was in, like, COVID, though. I don't know why I changed. And then, like, once I've, like, been in the outside world, it's back to P.
Really? That's so interesting. Like, is it... Okay, because you say you're an extrovert naturally. So, like, did you feel like you were more negative during COVID, which made you more judgment? No? Did you like it?
I liked it.
Oh, really? All the extroverts that I meet hated COVID.
I know, it's weird. I don't know. I think it was, like, for a while, I wasn't really, like introverting...
properly.
Until COVID. And I was like, wait, I actually really like this.
Wow, that sounds so healthy. That's awesome. Because I had like the best time during COVID.
Yeah, right.
It might have been like the best time of my life.
Yeah. That's so real. Yeah, and I feel bad sometimes about it too. But it's like, there were people dying, and I feel okay. Yeah. But
people feel good right now, and there's probably even more people dying now.
That's true. That's very true, actually.
You know, like, that was always something, you know, we, like, it's so much easier to talk about really obvious things, like male privilege, white privilege. This person is obviously male. This person is obviously white.
Yeah.
But the things that are, like, so much more subtle, like an underlying thing, I think there actually is, like, an extroverted privilege kind of thing, just because the Western society is so built around that. You know, when you see, like, the person that's just the loudest, talks a lot, like, quote-unquote charismatic or something, it's like you almost make a moral judgment like they're a better person, when a lot of time they're really not, you know? And then so when, like...
Because the ignorance is there.
Yeah.
The ignorance is bliss. But more of, like, extroverted, practical... What is it? Sensory people? Because they see it more straightforwardly, right? It's just, like, they don't... I feel like with ends, they tend to, like, empathize more.
I think so. Did you ever see that thing? Who knows if, like, any of this stuff is real?
Yeah.
Just moving from astrology to, like, the MBIT or whatever, but, like, that supposedly only half of people have an inner monologue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And only half of that have agency over the inner monologue.
Yeah.
Does that track for you? Do you have an inner monologue?
I do.
You do?
I do. But the thing is, like, I don't know what actually really goes. I don't know if I can explain it, because it's like there, my brain, like, goes like a mile a minute. I don't know. It's like it talks so fast, but then there's also, like, multiple voices.
Mm-hmm.
Am I neurodivergent? Hello.
Hello.
But yeah, it's like sometimes that's why it's, like, hard for me to explain things, or, like, to because it's so overwhelming up there. I just, like, I don't even know where to start. Because you're like, oh, you forgot this part, but then this part, and then this part, and then, like, I've totally moved on what I was even thinking about from before. So
I think that's the thing you slowly get better at, though. I think, you know. I think so.
This has happened for a while.
Well, yeah, because it takes a long time to get good at stuff. Like, I mean, like, this whole 50% thing is, like, and I've asked people, it's so strange. I'll ask people, like, do you have an inner monologue? And they'll straight up say no. They say they don't have a voice in their head.
Crazy.
It's crazy, but we probably only think it's crazy because we've only lived inside our own mind,
so,
right?
But then, like, when they read, like, do they not read, like, with their inner monologue?
No, they say their what is in here is literally only what is out here. So what is going on is not, like, it's like, okay, if you and me were to, like, watch a movie or watch a show, we'd probably, like, see what's going on, right? but we would like have an inner monologue about like, why did that happen? How does this apply to me? Oh, that's like that time that thing happened to me.
Actually, the only time is when I watch a movie.
Exactly. Yeah. Do you have an inner monologue then?
I do.
But if it's like a, but if it's like really deep or really good or really bad, you're always like locked into the show. Mm-hmm. Always? It's like hypnosis. Yeah. So you get hypnotized.
I get hypnotized. I do.
Wow, that's so lucky.
It's so weird. It's so weird. It's like the only time. I feel like because ever since I was like growing up, my brother was really into movies, so I think I was just trained.
Oh man, that's awesome.
It was like a, it's like a bubble. I don't know. I'm just so locked in. Flow state, you know what I mean?
Wow, that sounds like the best.
I know, that's the like rarest time like my head is like clear.
So if it was up to you, would you just like plug into a movie all the time?
No, I feel like that would be too much. I do like have, I like my conversations in my head. Actually, I was, this is not even an interview. I was reading a book.
This is not even an interview anymore.
Gosh, it's not even an interview. I was reading a book, and it was talking about, like, how to have more agency over your inner monologue.
And, yeah.
And I low-key don't like the book. I think it's I feel like it villainizes the inner monologue, which I don't like. I that's like my best friend.
See that's you know what I mean? That's I do know what you mean.
I find comfort in it. You know?
That's really beautiful though, because I don't think that's a thing for like a lot of people with an inner monologue hate it. They don't like it. They wish it would like shut the because it's like painful or it's really loud or something.
Well, there are times where I do feel that way, but I'm just like, well, you have to like live with it. You know, sometimes it's better to accept it than to like look at it like in a negative way or like just ignore it, because it's like it's gonna be there either way. And you're suppressing it.
I know. I mean, I think that's the part you get better at, though. Because, like, really, when I talk to people with no inner monologue, they actually say it with, like, some regret. They're like, my first thought is, like, that sounds awesome. So you're just present all the time? And then they'll give examples of, like, I wish I had an inner monologue so I just don't keep f***ing up. Because they say, like, they'll do something bad. They'll, like, cheat on their wife or, like, make a really bad business decision. And they're like, I didn't have an inner monologue by the time I realized what happened, like it was too late. I'm like, wow, that's not good either.
Actually, also sometimes in conversation, my inner monologue, like I don't hear anything up here. It just like goes out here.
I think that's the
like
part
word vomit.
That you control is like, you're like, okay, it's almost like I feel like it could be like singing. Like, no, I actually don't think anyone is naturally a good singer. Like, but some people have a voice, like you can hear like, oh, that could be something. But with time, you slowly make it sound the way you want it to sound. I think the inner monologue can kind of be like that. You slowly get it to like direct how you want it to go.
I guess so, like because you've been with, I guess like in COVID, right? Like I realized that, oh, I mess with my inner monologue actually. And I feel like there are people who have inner monologues that need to like maybe sit down with it and just like have a lot of hermit time, you know, to and just like, you know, like get to know it and
be okay with it. Yeah, that's so, I wish it happened that way for, because like that's what I felt too. Like I really liked it because I was like, oh, now I get quality time with my inner monologue. Whereas like on tour, it's just, you're reacting like all the time. Mm-hmm. But then I saw a lot of like the more extroverted artists in Trifecta, or even just like extroverts in general. It's like, even some of them still, I don't think they really recovered from COVID because they couldn't be with the inner monologue. And then,
oh, it's like more it wasn't happy thoughts.
No, it ended up being like a really bad thing.
Yeah, that's real. That's
also scary.
Yeah, they're demons, you know?
It is the demons.
As one would say, but yeah, that is scary. You know, I'm grateful for like the way I think, and I guess like, because when I had those like conversations in my head with like my inner monologue, it just like, it was like fun. Like, I was making myself laugh like every day.
That's so good.
So I was never bored.
Yeah, it was the best. It was the best. I wish it would come back. Just kidding, but not really. I think the thing I actually wish for is, like, the side effect.
Like martial law.
Like, no. Just, like, the time to slow down and, like sit with yourself.
Okay. Like, everybody needs a vacation.
That part, not the crazy part. But it's not just a vacation, though, because the vacation, you're like, you know when it's going to end. You know when you need to go back to work. The nice part about COVID was, like, we don't know what's going to happen. So maybe we can just, like, actually make bread, or I can, like, learn this song or something, you know?
That's true.
The amount of people making bread was crazy.
And people still do. They picked that up. So.
Yeah.
And they just ran with it. So talking about your music.
This interview was crazy.
And that's the thing. I like to leave an impression on the artist, you know? Like, when I was interviewing Lauren, she really liked the questions and, you know, what we talked about. This one's more of, like, this interview, I've only touched upon, like, two questions, like, I think. Maybe, yeah, I think it was just two, three?
We're just hanging out, you
know? We're just hanging out, honestly. Like, and I feel like we don't need to, like, talk about your music or, like, talk about, like, what I wanted to ask, just for, like, the audience to know, like, who you are as an artist, you know? I feel like this is the most I've talked on an artist on TV, because I don't know, it was just like, I guess I just felt so comfortable talking about these things with you, and it's just like, you know, like talking, like, you're like open-minded and you like want to talk about deep things.
I think that says more. I could be wrong, but when people talk about their music, it's not always bad. But sometimes I get the same kind of feeling as, like, when someone writes about music, they give an album review, but you kind of also know they don't actually write music, they only write about music. And then I'm just like, just let me listen to the music, you know? It's like, I don't understand writing about music in the same way I don't. It's like, is that like that?
Like music journalism?
Sometimes, and then critiquing it, sometimes I feel like, is that like the saying when someone's trying to, like, dance to architecture?
True.
Or something?
It's like analyzing a movie too, right?
Yeah. It's so different, like, being in it, but I feel like when I hear someone just talk or see them hang out or exist in the world, I can also kind of get a feeling like, oh, I think I know what their music would be like. Because you're seeing the essence of them, and the music is supposed to be the essence of you, you know? So yeah, I kind of like this better anyway.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, if people want to listen to the music, whatever. But if they do listen to the music, it's just like, oh, that, hopefully they're like, oh, that makes sense. This came out of that guy.
Yeah. It's an hour now, if you were wondering. But
wow, that just felt like it flew by.
I know. I feel like I have to go to the end of my questions now. Yeah, the other ones weren't really that important anyway. I was gonna ask about Samurai Champs and your hip hop crew.
Mm-hmm.
And did you name it after Samurai Champloo, like the anime? Yeah.
Wow, nice. Not everyone gets the reference.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like that's the first thing I think of.
Nah. It was specifically, I think it's like the second last episode or the third last episode. Have you watched the whole thing?
I didn't finish it.
Oh.
It's so funny because I watched, like, the beginning in, like, grade 8, and then I keep on trying to, like, go past, like, an episode or two, and I end up just stopping there again, and then, I haven't finished it, in short.
I think it's, like, one of those things, like, all the rewards are almost, like, at the end.
That makes sense.
In the specific episode that me and Savan, like, the rapper in the group, we really liked the episode. I'm pretty sure it's the second or third last episode, where there's, like, the little island, and then this American ship lands on the island, and then obviously they try to colonize it, and then, so the villagers and the Americans have a contest. They're like, okay, whoever wins gets the island, but you can pick the sport. So obviously the Americans pick baseball.
Obviously.
Which, you know, the little Japanese fishing village has no idea, like, what the fuck is baseball?
Yeah.
And then, so they don't really know the rules, but they're still, like, playing. And then the Americans are winning. And they're like, we don't need to fight like they do. And they still, like, end up winning anyway. But it's not just because they fight one way or the other. It's because they kind of, like, adapt to the American way also. And then the Americans, like, leave. But to me, that episode was, like, this is one of the best examples I've seen of, like, a lot of the time you don't win by doing it their way or your way, but trying to find, like, what's the best from both. And that was always what we kind of wanted to do with, like, Samurai Champs, like, the group. Like, me and Savan, we've been best friends since high school. We still are. And we're just completely the opposite from each other. He's so extroverted. He's, like, the most Leo you can ever imagine. He's, like, basically... He's such a Leo. He's basically, like, a big, muscular, Cambodian version of a Kevin Nguyen. Like... And I'm just like, leave me alone and let me play my Switch. But I always felt like everything that worked for us, we did some really cool stuff. Like, we toured Europe and the UK, and we played South by Southwest. And all that stuff was because we always, like, found a way to just, like, get the best parts of us. It was like, it sounds so dumb, but we were always like, if only we could have a relationship. Like, if our romantic relationships was, like, closer to what we had. Because it actually felt like what a marriage is supposed to be, you know? Like,
I get that.
Yeah, like, you're just trying to take the best parts of yourself, and you're not even trying to, you're trying to make yourself better and the other person better, but you're trying to make this thing outside of you, which is supposed to be the marriage or the kids or whatever, better with just the best parts of you. And for us, that was, like, the band. And that was all from, like, that episode.
So this is, like, you're married musically, and the birth is the band.
Yeah, basically.
Right. Yes, and you were talking about that you traveled while you were in that band. What was your favorite place to visit? Why?
The two that always stick out in my head was, like, we played Tallinn Music Week in Estonia, and it was, like, the most random place. Like, it's where Skype was invented, and it was, like, no rice, so I was losing my mind.
Right.
It's just hard bread and liquid meat, but it was just... But it was just so interesting because we never thought we'd ever go someplace like that. But then on the other side, right before COVID, the last thing we played was a music festival in Singapore. And that's where the song Soju came out of, like, on the guitar songs. And Savan's family escaped from Cambodia during the genocide. And so as, like, a fully formed human being, he never had a chance to go back. Because when we went to Singapore to play that festival, and, like, you know, Canada has, like, good artist grants and stuff, we were able to go to Cambodia and him, like, see his mother country for the first time. And it's so strange when you think about, like, you literally see it as he got off the plane. It's like, it must be so weird when your entire ancestry has been, like, always eating the same thing, you always see the same landscape, you always see feel the same humidity on your skin, and you have one generation that doesn't because he grew up in Canada. And then when he went, it's like he just, like, activated.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and we never would have been able to do that without, like, music, you know? Like, maybe that was the whole point, and that was right before COVID happened. I think we may have actually got the first version of COVID because we got really sick when we got back. But yeah, it was like, that, like, stays with you forever, I think.
You also talked about in your last interview on video at Takes a Village that you were in a hardcore band.
Oh, that's a really deep cut. Wait, where was this?
Takes a Village. You said it.
Oh, I thought you meant, like, on a video. I was like,
yeah, my video.
Oh, right. Okay, yeah. In my hometown, I grew up more in, like, the heavy genre, like, in the hardcore music scene. So that alt-rock band, the emo band that I'm in now, is actually with a lot of guys from that hardcore scene.
Okay, interesting. That's cool. So you're not
going to
go to hardcore again?
They,
like, fucked up your voice, right?
Who knows? It's still a really important part. Like, weirdly, when I do this guitar song stuff, it's almost always people from the Canadian hardcore scene that... If I need a guitar, they show up with a guitar. If I need an amp, it's...
Honestly, the hardcore scene is so wholesome. Like, it's
cute. I remember one time my little brother was like, your hardcore scene is so strange. It's like a fungal network. Like... It's like a network that goes under the soil. But, like, last year, actually, after I played South by Southwest, I went to Victoria. I had a radio thing there. And a lot of people from the hardcore scene that I grew up in Saskatchewan, they're originally from Manitoba, but they all moved to Victoria. And I haven't spoken to them in like over 10 years or something since I started doing the hip-hop stuff. And then since I was in Victoria for like the first time in forever, I just messaged a bunch of them because I literally needed like an amp. And they all like showed up.
Aww.
I borrowed one of their amps. It's like, it's so weird. I think it has something to do with, it's maybe wholesome because you know full well this genre. It's different now because like heavy music is really popular right now for whatever reason. Yeah, I mean, that's why like bands like Knocked Loose and Speed,
oh,
and
yeah, that's true.
They're like playing technically mainstream festivals. Like,
I think it's because like people would listen to it ironically and then like it would become like irony poisoning.
I think so, yeah. Whatever it is, it's like before you kind of knew you're doing this music thing because you just love it. You're never really gonna make, even if you were the biggest hardcore band, you're still making as much as a substitute teacher. So then it's still like you're doing it for like really internal reasons, you know, whereas I don't think that's built into every genre. Some, a lot of genres, like I actually feel like a lot of like hip hop and a lot of R&B, a lot of artists don't actually love art. They're not actual artists. They don't actually love making music. They just love that it made them feel seen or something.
I can see that actually. Yeah, I agree with the art thing and hardcore music. Honestly, being at shows, like hardcore shows, it's like so wholesome and people are so nice. But then we're like beating each other up, like we're moshing in the pit. So, but that's just like the way it is though. I guess this will be one of the few last questions.
Okay.
I have for you, what can fans anticipate for the future? What type of projects are you working on at the moment?
Guitar album 1 is coming out at the end of the month. Probably gonna release something from guitar album 2 pretty soon after. I'm going on tour to the UK and Europe and New York this weekend.
Ooh, okay. That's awesome.
Yeah, so this tour I think is like it's running until like the end of November. But I also have a lot of songs coming out with different artists from Toronto. Takes a Village.
I wanted
like,
to talk about Takes a Village too. Sorry, hold on. Let me get it.
Okay.
So you're involved in Takes a Village.
Yeah.
There's a big group in a studio room sometimes jamming out mm-hmm. there. What is that experience like? How does it change your perspective on like creating music?
I mean, for one, it's like exactly what I wanted to come to Toronto for. I've always kind of, since Samurai Champs would have to like tour here quite a bit just because of like the hip-hop scene, Toronto really became like a second home. It just has like so many things. Like, I still love my hometown and everything, but there's just certain things you can't get there, you know? You can't, there would be no way an Asian singer-songwriter group could form in Sask. But here, I found that with Takes a Village. It was like so nice. It was through Harrison, who's an agent, and I met him, I think, at a music festival in 2023 or something. And then he just was like, hey, you should come meet these guys.
Yeah.
And then so my whole last summer was like just coming to these sessions like every week. And it actually made me feel like, oh, this was like exactly the community I kind of needed. And also I'm such an introverted songwriter that it, you know, it kind of forced me to like, okay, this is probably healthy for me to learn how to make songs with other people too. So I think October 10th is when the song comes out. I have one with Kyle and Eric Ryan.
Awesome, love those guys.
Yeah.
I just saw Kyle perform.
Oh, sick. You went to the EP release?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow, I wish I was there. It looked so good.
Yeah, crazy entrance.
Yeah, the showmanship, I heard. The spotlight. But yeah, the song's called Take It Slow with them. And it's out on October 10th. Actually, right after this, I have to bike home, and then we're shooting the song art for it. Yeah, the art's gonna be, it's gonna be a dish, Puta no Kukani. It's gonna be a dish made by Malaya. He's like one of the chefs at Peppers. And it's kind of like, cause the dish has like a slow braised pork belly. And the whole song is supposed to be like taking it slow. You know, like a relationship, food, like art, the best things, like you need to take it slow.
Like Takes a Village, I like locate everything too.
Really?
Yeah, my first like video interviews are like from the first Takes a Village event.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then also like the other, like I met you at Takes a Village. I met so many people at like Takes a Village, and which is like the entire point of it. But also just like seeing like all the stories of like you guys in the studio, that like looks so wholesome to me, and I FOMO, but like, hey, what can I do? Like, I don't make music, so like,
it's very awesome. But, like, it's extremely awesome. Like, you don't have to come make music. A lot of people just come to hang out. You know, like, I mean, if you wanted to bring like this stuff, sometimes like photographers come, designers come. It's just every Monday.
But yeah, being at Kyle's like show, I low-key forgot how much I missed like that community and like how I feel like I've been so out of touch from it, and that I want to like go back into that grind, like this type of grind, so that I'm like part of that community again. It's just,
it's important, you know. It's really important. Because then you feel like connected to something.
Yeah, a part of something.
Yeah. You're Filipino?
I am.
Yeah? Yeah. You know, and that's reason enough. Yeah. I saw your necklace.
Oh, yes. I don't know. I feel like every time I, like, do an interview, suddenly I mention Taste of Village.
It is a really nice common thread.
Yeah. It's the TCU of it all. Toronto Cinematic University.
Yeah, Toronto. I can only imagine that, you know, 5 years from now, there'll probably be so many, like, things that sprouted out from Takes a Village.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And honestly, Hamlet should just pat himself on the back, you know? He's just, like, done so much for the community.
Yeah. For real, he's coming to the shoot too. I'll pat his back for him.
Yeah, let him know for me. Well, thank you so much for doing this interview. I hope you enjoyed being here. Everybody listen to Word XX Gaudi. Thanks everyone for listening to this interview. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus.